Hey, it's Mike Treem with Crawford Media Group. Today, we're joined by Paul Dayton. Paul is an author and financial expert. And Paul, thanks for taking time with us.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Hey, we're grateful for your time, Paul, and your expertise. And we want to talk about, first, some of the financial misconceptions and misunderstandings that people have. Then we're going to get into college costs and just the huge burden that's putting on all of us. Before we start, tell us a little bit about yourself, your book, kind of some of the things you've been doing with people to help them.
Well, thanks. I am a small business guy. I'm a guy who kind of worked regular jobs. I didn't go to college, which is something we're going to talk about, and it's one of the big boons for my career. And I just kind of worked ordinary jobs, saved my money, and I learned about how to utilize that money. I spent those years, you know, at home reading books, learning what do you do once you have the money in your hands and how to best utilize it. As a result of that, by the time I was in my late 20s, I was able to sort of live sort of a semi-retired lifestyle in terms of my financial necessities. Built a small portfolio, doing small business ventures, and today, it's about 10 years later, and I really enjoy helping people and going around and trying to teach people ways, share with them things I've learned that are just better ways of utilizing their money so that they can live a more free life and have more access to their time.
So, Paul, the financial miseducation part of it, you took a different path than some of the folks here that I work with, than some of my children. So tell us what that was like and what some of the freedoms were and how it's changed how you advise and help people.
Well, what I've noticed is there's sort of a predetermined template for, you know, quote unquote, making it for most people in this country, which consists of you go to school, then you try real hard to get into a college, you get your degree, try to please the professors, get your degree, and then with your degree, you go out and try to beg somebody to hire you for a job, and you cling to that company as long as you can. And then what you do with your money is most people, the majority of their net worth is in the equity in their single-family home and in their so-called retirement account. And the problem with this is that the person can never really make their own lunch money. They're always looking outward to try to have somebody else pay them their, you know, their money they need to get by. And even if you could make money inside the retirement account, it's trapped, it's imprisoned behind those bars. And so it's not that I am so great, it's that what I'm doing is more useful. It's like when you're in gym class or something, and you're trying to bounce the ball on a gymnasium floor. I have a round ball while other people are using a football. And so for them to do with a football, three bounces in a row is very difficult. But for me, I'm sitting there all day long bouncing that ball up and down. I can't go behind my back. I can't go between my legs. I'm not that good. But the method that I'm using, the tools in my hands are more suited for the job. And I just try to help people, you know, nudge them in that direction so that they can live better lives.
So in your book, tell us about the book, tell us about the title and how people get it, and then get into how you addressed it in the book. You talk about bouncing the ball several times instead of just you get one kick and that's about it. Tell us what that means.
Sure. Well, what I mean by that is it's just easier to, when you talk the bouncing the ball analogy, it means that because I have the round ball in my hand as opposed to the oblong ball, tool in my hand is more suited for the job. You know, another analogy I use is people say they want to build an airplane, but they're following the template for how to build a cornfield. They say they want to live a life of greater freedom with more money and more latitude, but they follow the template I mentioned before. They're just following the wrong, they're trying to navigate the state of Idaho with a roadmap for the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. It's not that they aren't trying. It's not that they aren't applying themselves. I see people. They double down on their efforts. There's an old nautical expression. Having lost sight of my objective, I doubled my efforts to get there and got nowhere. People are trying hard, but they're just spinning their wheels because they're not really following a proper path. And so the book, Correcting Your Financial Miseducation, is just taking things that are commonly held sort of, I don't know, facts, but that aren't really facts. They're misconceptions. And taking evidence and subjecting these misconceptions to evidence and letting the reader, you know, illustrating to the reader that the way that they've been taught is not exactly accurate and ways that are better to use instead. I start out with personal finance. The first half of the book is how to gain your freedom through personal finance and building a career, building a portfolio. Second half of the book is how not to screw it up on election day. And so we cover some personal finance and some larger financial issues.
And you achieved that level of independence at a really young age. Are there any nuggets you can give us, or things that would especially, you know, cause people to say, you know what, I want to go get the book, because that's really the ultimate goal of what we're trying to do here?
Well, sure. I appreciate that. The whole point of the book for me is to try to help people. I'm not looking to be an author for a living. I would like your, people are allowed to buy it. If you put some money in the register, it enables me to keep putting more time into this project, I guess, of trying to help people. But, you know, one thing I tell people that it's a major misconception, it's not a money pile game. It's a portfolio cash flow game.
That is,
people think they have to amass this big, big pile of cash so they can draw from it. And so it's like when I was younger and I was worse with my money, I'd have, you know, a pile of $20 bills on my dresser, and you just take from it and take from it until it dwindles and it's gone. And people think they need this massive pile because they never want it to run out. Well, if you create a self-sustaining financial resource in your portfolio, then you really don't need that big of a money pile. It's not that I had, you know, $50 million by the time I was in my late 20s. When I was able to sort of walk away, I think my net worth was $50,000 or $70,000. But because my portfolio cash flow was such that it covered my housing, covered my groceries, it covers all my little costs without requiring very much input for me in terms of time, that's what enabled me to walk away. That's your portfolio cash flow stat is your freedom stat, and this, as opposed to your money pile stat. And that goes back to what I was saying before, but following the proper template, the proper roadmap. If you have your eye on the right objective, you're more likely to achieve it.
Paul, do you find that people are starting, at least some of them are starting to say, you know, chasing that money pile is not working for me. Having that house and expecting that really to do anything for me, terms of financial freedoms, contentment, those types of things, versus just, hey, I have a big house, you know, that's not working out either. How are you seeing those two issues when it comes to people today? Are they starting to wake up a little?
What I find is people become they have discontent and they get frustrated and they sort of throw up their arms and they just kind of have this helpless feeling, and they turn away from, they stop trying because their efforts aren't really yielding them anything. And again, it's because they're trying to, build an airplane with an instruction manual for how to plant a cornfield. Not that there's anything wrong with airplanes or cornfields. You could switch the two. The point is that they become upset, they become apathetic, and they become frustrated. And so what I'm trying to do is to alleviate those frustrations by, again, just showing them, hey, just pointing their ship in the right direction. You know, illustrating to people, what is a career? What is money? Money is not just these little green pieces of paper. There's all kinds of varieties of money. There are real estate deeds. There are guns and ammo. There are livestock. There's arable land as opposed to like city land. There are stocks in other people's companies, municipal bonds, corporate bonds, on and on you go. There's all different forms of money. By familiarizing oneself with the different kinds of money and becoming competent in their uses, I mean, this is the way to direct one's energy so that you get more bang for your buck, so to speak, with the utilization of the money. You go out, you earn this money, you work hard for it, and you save it away, and now what do you do with it? So you're going out, getting a job, earning money, saving some money. Those are all one problem, but really, once you get that savings, you have a whole new problem, whole new job. What to do with that money? How do I best utilize my ammo, I'll call it, as I try to fend off the attackers of life, so to speak.
Yeah. What are some of those attackers? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, the necessities of life, things like you need to cover food, water, and shelter, for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, namely, food, water, shelter, health care, those kinds of things. What about temporary, you know, if somebody drops something on their foot and now they can't work their job for 6 weeks or something? Or I watched a guy do this once. He did something to his wrist, somehow broke it. And he had to go keep working his job, facing disfiguring himself, probably forever, according to his doctor, because he turned to me and said, I can't go 6 weeks without my paycheck. And that's just it. I don't have a choice. If I've messed up wrist the rest of my life, that's how it is. because I can't go 6 weeks without, you know, without my, or 3 weeks or whatever it was that was supposed to be in the cast. These are the things, you know, life happens. I'm not putting the person down. I'm not putting anybody down who doesn't, you know, who's not able to do that right now. Again, what I'm trying to do is put, make it so that the new, right, the subtitle of the book is Raising the Bar for the Average, which is translated into Elevating the Standard for Ordinary. I want to help people become more competent with their money so that they can live better lives by utilizing it more properly.
Yeah, I think that's a great mission for our listeners to hear is you know, making money work for you properly. And what was the rest of the sentence? I don't want to misspeak. I want it to be exactly what you just said.
Well, I mean, that's it. Using the money properly. And again, the phrase I use, it's not a money pile game. It's a portfolio cash flow game.
Okay. Okay. And that's different thinking than a lot of us have. We're speaking with Paul Dayton, author Paul Dayton. The book is called Correcting Our Financial Miseducation. And that book is available through Amazon, Paul?
It is. And my website is pauldayton.us, where people can be able to buy the book from there. I also release little snippets in like article form, which are just little, you know, previews of the book, you know, six paragraphs here, eight paragraphs there, where people can get a little flavor of it. And they can also check out my forthcoming book, Socialism, the Gift That Keeps on Taking, which will be out very soon.
No snark there, right? So, Paul, we've got time for probably one more question or one more, you know, one more topic. What would be a good overarching concept for you to talk about for a minute to our listeners based on the book, based on some of the principles you're teaching?
Well, you know, college, and you mentioned it earlier in our talk today, is a major topic. And we see people on television, whether they're news anchors or politicians, and they, on one side of their mouth, they say that college is so valuable that nobody can be denied it. And the other side of their mouth, often the next sentence, they say college certificates are so worthless that nobody should be forced to pay for them.
Yeah.
And the question is, well, the first question that should go off for people's minds is, well, which one is it? Right. And so the real question is, how should one arrange their activities and finances during their 20s so that they're best financially positioned as they proceed to adulthood? And the answer to that in the overwhelming majority of cases today is to avoid college entirely. Why is that? Because basically, the long story short is everybody cannot get to the front of the line. Well, in 1940 and 1950, 5 to 7% of Americans, that's 1 in 20 people, had a college certificate. By 1990, it was 1 in 4 Americans. Present day, it's 1 in 3 Americans has at least one college degree. If you have 60,000 people going to a rock concert or a sporting event or something like that, if only 5% of them have a VIP pass, then it's worth the extra money, right? But if 20,000 people have a VIP pass and 40,000 people have a regular ticket, you just have two very long lines, and it's not really worth the extra money for the VIP pass. Two-thirds of jobs in the U.S. today require no college degree. And by utilizing the unemployment figures and the income figures that you'll see, you say, okay, high school student, X amount per month, 4-year degree, X amount per month, and so on. If somebody just gets a regular job and, quote, lives like a college student for 4 years, like rent a house with 4 people, pay $300 a person, or if your parents, some parents will say, look, I just want to help my children with their future. They'll let you stay in the house free of charge as long as you, and they'll say, the rest of that sentence is usually, are in college. But if you say, okay, as long as you have a job and you show me your banks, your pay stubs and your bank statement, and you save at least X amount of your money, 20% or more, then you can live here rent free. What happens is the person works a regular job and saves just 20% of their income. After a period of 4 years, they have $25,000 in the bank based on the national averages.
Yeah.
That's enough to put a down, to put 10% down on the average price house in the United States in 2020. You can buy a duplex, rent out the other half of your house for your first house. Now you have an income producing asset, that a home that pays for itself, and your asset column, or your net worth rather, is $25,000. Whereas a person, the average person with a 4-year degree in 2016 had $37,000 in student debt. And of course they have an empty asset column because they've been in college.
Yes.
The difference between those two numbers, is $63,000, right? Negative $37,000 versus positive $25,000. That's a gap of $63,000 in net worth. the person has, you know, there's, and by the way, it's a gamble, and it, there are certain jobs, if you want to be a medical doctor, if you want to be a rocket scientist, yes, you need to do that. But on the whole, if you just say, hey, listen, I want to be in a better position to go through my life, the answer is you don't need your college certificate. By 2007, the 2007-2008 class in the United States, in 5 years, half were in deferment on their student loans. If it was such a golden ticket, there wouldn't be all this mass calamity for people saying that they can't pay for them. And that's all I want people to understand.
Paul, so much good stuff, and we've just touched the surface of it. We've got to go, so I'll just tell people it's Correcting Our Financial Miseducation. That's the book by Paul Dayton, D-A-Y-T-O-N. Go on to Amazon, or better yet, go to his website, pauldayton.us. That's pauldayton.us. Paul, thanks so much for the time with us.
Thank you, Mike.